Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. Comment here. Peter, how can you gauge the success of third parties when Lynette got almost the same number of votes as Natalie? Some Dems may have stayed home, while many others didn't vote previously. Many would have been motivated to vote. And then a person is asking a similar question. How can you account for people living abroad, physically incapable, religious reasons, imprisonment, etc.? I'd add to that, ma'am, I believe it's a lady, that the challenge I face when looking at that whole analysis of the number of people who stayed home is that it's unrealistic. The number of people who did not vote in this election would have been influenced largely by the fact that a lot of them could not vote. My feeling is that we have probably upwards of 20% of people who are on the voters list that are either dead or have migrated overseas with no further interest in voting in Barbados. And therein lies the problem. We have not had a re-registration now for about a quarter of a century. And then that's the only way that you can know reasonably how it happens. I was involved in a similar process in St. Kitts. I also am aware of what happened in Grenada. And in both instances, they took off about 20% of the people who were registered. And now they have voter turnouts in the vicinity of 80% and 90% and that one. The one in Antigua last election was 90%. That, to me, is closer because most people in Barbados are responsible and do vote. So the 60% is not really reflective of that. What I prefer to do is to look at the change between one election and the other, because that, to me, tells a better story, largely because it is slightly more proximate. So what happened between last election and now is slightly more reflective of a reality. And I would say that there was a 4% decrease. Even though there was an increase in the size of the voters list, there was a 4% decrease in the number of people who participated this time around. And I think that that is the important statistic that we need to look at. Dr. Brastax, good morning. Good morning and welcome. Okay, we're on the air. Good morning and welcome. 434-1790. Good morning.
Morning, Mr. Wickham. How are you doing?
I'm great. And yourself?
Boy, this is me again, boy.
Yeah, all right.
You catch the voice?
I didn't catch your voice, but I will in due course, I'm sure.
Yes. This is the guy that has had a chat with you about the disability unit with the...
Okay, yeah. So
yeah, you got me, though. You got me, though.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I took in my licks. You know, remember you told me that I'm a Dem that you like to have a conversation with, because because I'm a Dem, I don't think that everything they do is right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we had that conversation. But before I get into my real discussion, I want to ask the minister who is responsible for the social care disability unit, I think it's Cynthia Ford,
mm-hmm.
to look at my baby that I have been talking about, the removal of the disability unit from upstairs, the NUPW. And it is a correction that she has to make that was done by her previous administration. The disability unit was put upstairs by the Barbados Labour Party administration prior to 2008.
So you have issues of access.
Huh?
You have issues of access.
Yes, yes.
Right. How do you overcome those issues now?
Me getting upstairs the disability unit?
Yeah.
It didn't move yet.
I know, but how do you overcome that challenge? How do you access it now?
But
how do people who have physical disabilities?
They have to sit there, got to wait downstairs in the car park or go to the lunchroom for the staff to come
to
down.
Okay.
Right.
No, that's unacceptable. And I don't think that anyone would want to defend it. I suspect it was a reality of need, but I think that we all agree that it's not an acceptable situation and it ought to be changed. So,
right. And the last minister played upon it and refused. Well, I would say refused because...
Let's say he was unable to.
The last thing that he said to us that it would be moved by the end of April, so
mm-hmm.
I don't know if he meant the April that was coming or whatever.
We were also told that we would have that for 18 months, so don't worry.
I want to say, Mr. Wickham, I totally agree with you this morning. Well, not this morning, but I think it was this morning. When you told the guy just now, forget about the chicken wing. Hello?
See, you're a New Testament person too. Just finish quickly, because we're going to go to the latest. But you finish
right,
quickly.
Right, you know, put those things aside. The new administrator has taken over. Let us go forward. I'm a Dem. But let us go forward and see what the new administration can do for this country. And start hampering for chicken wings and turkey wings That's childish attitude, Mr. Wickham.
Are you on a landline or are you on a cell phone?
I'm on a landline.
Right. Can you hold on until we come back from the regional roundup? Because
I really
want to get your take on what you think the new DLP administration ought to look like. I'm anxious to talk to them this morning. So you stick around. When we come back from the regional roundup, we'll have a conversation with you. Do stay with us. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am here, buddy.
Right. So tell me, what would you like to see the Democratic Labour Party look like going forward? Which personalities are you anxious to see at the forefront?
I would like to see the elders of the party first. Just listen to me, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
The elders of the party. I mean people like
Sir Philip?
Maisie Barker, Sir Philip, and those people. Sit down with the young people and advise them. Be advisors to the young people who will be taking over the party. Not that we want the elders to come now and run back again, because it wouldn't make any sense. But to advise the young people who are coming in, learn them about the philosophy of the party and what Errol Barrow stands for, and let us go forward. There are some of the former candidates, Mr. Wickham, I think should gracefully bow out and go home and sit down.
Some?
Yes. There's only two that I feel should stay around.
Namely?
The two should be Don Valenis and the former Minister of Tourism.
So what, finance?
He could go along home. He has disappointed me.
Hmm.
I know him personally. When he was the candidate for St. Michael's Central, when I used to live in Bushaw.
Okay.
Right. But he has disappointed me. Also, Mr. Eswick has disappointed me with his behavior on the platform. I knew him for many years. His brother and I were members of St. Hope Barbados together.
Okay.
Right. And he has disappointed me with his behavior on the platform. I don't believe, Mr. Wickham, in that sort of abusive language in general public. What do you think the young people, the young children like my grandchildren, who are still at school, do you expect them to look up to you as a leader in this country? No. Mm-hmm. And they should be scolded for it by not being allowed to run again on a Democratic Labour Party ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm a Dem.
Yeah,
but
go ahead.
I'm a Dem. But I'm a Dem that believe in decency and respect. Right? And because I might be a Dem and you are a Dem, I'm not going to hide your faults just because I'm a Dem.
Do you believe that it would be useful for the Democratic Labour Party to apologize to its supporters and to Barbados in general for the manner in which it prosecuted the last campaign? Do you think that would be useful?
Yes. Because when I heard the meeting from the stadium, I didn't like the way they carried on the meeting. I don't believe in abusing people's character on the platform. I don't believe in that at all, right? Even when I was a young fella in the Democratic Labour Party, because as I said, and I will keep saying it, I joined the Democratic Labour Party as soon as I turned 18 in 1974. And the first time I ever voted was in 1976, which we lost, right, to Tom Adams, right? But I have learned and I have come through the ranks. I take licks and I share licks. But I'm not going to sit down, Mr. Wickham. As I said, and because I'm a Dem, man, the right to do it. No, they're wrong. And I would tell them to the face that they're wrong also. And myself and Leroy McLean, I think they're the only two that I have, you know, think that they were wrong to do what they did on the platform. If you have any gross with me, talk about her policies, not about her personal life.
You know, sir, one of my concerns, one of my reservations, and I think I said it before on another program, that it's different when you are standing in a crowd in a political meeting under a tree, you know, on the back of a truck, and someone is berating an individual. It sounds different to when you are watching this thing at home in a comfortable chair or in your bed lying down, wrapped up in a blanket.
Right. I didn't
with a glass of wine.
Because of my disability, Mr. Wickham, my problem would have been transport to go to the meeting.
So you use Facebook
to them on online. Not Facebook. I listen online at the stream.
Yeah.
You know,
And therein lies the problem, because they think that this campaign, more than any other, there was a lot of streaming.
Yeah.
And I think that had a lot to do with it. Because were you at those meetings and you heard this thing live, it wouldn't have the same kind of resonance that it has.
When
you sit down at home and you, out of context, you watch it and you hear this thing and it's like, what really going on? And I think that's an important lesson to learn.
Even the last meeting in Independence Square of the Democratic Labour Party. Mm-hmm. I know Dems going to cast me, but don't worry. Because mm-hmm. I use a passport holding the Democrat Labour Party. Nobody can stop me from walking through the Democrat Labour Party. Yeah. Get ready. Mm-hmm. The Prime Minister on the final night did not say what he is going to do for this country if he retains power. All he mentioned is that Ronald Jones did this, Chris Tinkler did this. He mentioned every candidate and what they did during their term of office. Okay. Yes, that is critical so that people can remember. But say what you are going to do for the country if you retain the government. Let us know what you're going to do.
Yeah,
and that did not happen on the final night. You remember, Mr. Wickham, on the final night of any campaign that Errol Barrow or even Tom Adams thing, they always give you something to go home.
Inspirational.
Which was Errol Barrow's, you remember, the mirror image speech.
Right. I remember it was in Independence Square.
You understand? That is the sort of politics that I'm accustomed
but
to.
But we went home saying, look, it's all over.
Yes, you know, I don't believe Mr. Wickham in pulling down people's character, right? And that is where the Democratic Labour Party failed in this election, right? Trying to assassinate people's character, right? Instead of telling us your policies on what you're going to do. And I'm a Democratic Labour Party supporter to the end, because I am not going to hide it, Peter Wickham. I vote for Richard Seeley.
All right, I'm going to ask you to give way now, because we actually have Stricker Senatory on the line, and he and I have important business to discuss. He, like yourself, is a supporter of the Democratic Labour Party. So I don't think you would object to me giving way. Is that okay? Okay, thanks a lot for calling, sir. It's good chatting with you, and we can talk some more about this. Good morning, and welcome.
Mr. Wickham, like, you don't know the time of day now. Good afternoon.
It said morning. Yeah, the election result had me bewildered, so forget morning from there.
Yes. Anyhow, Mr. Wickham, I don't know if you heard the program yesterday.
I didn't, no.
Right, well, I told Mr. Ellis yesterday. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will speak to him, then I will speak to you today, and then I will give the people their 100-day honeymoon.
Okay.
So I will be back after our annual conference. I'll be back sometime about September.
All right.
Right. Now, I really wanted to...
Did you hear my prefatory remarks today?
Yeah, most of it.
Okay. So you heard that I have been given authority to discuss polls with you.
No, not with me.
Not with you.
Not with me. You have been given permission to discuss an unpublished poll, but it cannot be discussed with me.
I have been given permission to discuss unpublished polls with you in a public forum.
No, Mr. Wickham. You know.
All right. Anyhow, let me proceed, because we ain't got a lot of time. It's 21 right, past. And the latest coming up.
No, so. This is why you would tell the lady, because you say it's a lady.
Yeah.
I would tell her thanks, but no thanks.
Okay.
Right now, we have the real thing.
So you don't want to hear the polls?
No, if you got the real thing, you don't make sense going for the other things.
Jeez.
If she didn't have the courage.
A lot of disappointed people out there.
Yes, just as I was when I was asking for polls all
to be published.
I'm glad to see now that the people should have support me. And let me get something to discuss. But I'm not discussing the poll after the fact.
But
you know,
but let me ask you this question, though. What effect do you think the publication of poll data would have had on the last election campaign?
I don't know, because I don't know what they would have said. I don't know what we had to discuss.
And so I'm prepared to tell you.
I've been given permission to tell you. Not after the fact, Mr. Wickham. Don't even start.
So everybody, you're not even slightly curious?
I'm interested. I got the real thing now, so I don't have to worry. I'm going to do my postmortem on the real thing.
I got to have this conversation with somebody.
anybody else. You can do that, but not with me. I like things up front. You know, I always say my position.
Yeah, up front. I had no problem with that. But that's the reason why. That's the reason why we thought that you would have been.
Leave that there.
All along, sir, we thought that you would be the person most interested. And I say me and myself and the client, most interested in having this conversation, and that you would have been chomping at the bit this morning to talk to me to hear these polls that you're calling for.
Up to Thursday morning, I would have been chomping at the bit, but not after I get the real thing. Not after you get the real thing. It's pointless going for the non-genuine when you've got the genuine.
But can I just make a point to you, though, sir, before you go into your response, and just say to you that I believe I have good reason to conclude that had these polls been published, the result would probably not have been what it was in the last election. Because I think that there are a number of people who are concerned about the result. And if I'm to judge by the number of people who said to me, Peter, had you told me this, I would not have voted the way I voted. I am led to believe that what happened in 2013 had a lot to do with the publication of polls. And the decision not to publish this time around was probably the right thing.
Well, you know, hindsight.
Any comment from you?
Hindsight is always 20/20 vision.
This is true.
But there's one that I would leave with you, and because like I said, I'm going to leave it until September. Mm-hmm. Now, Miss Motley, in her effort to spread out the ministries, give everybody some, and don't leave anyone behind. I still see a chink in the armor. Now, Glenn Clark, which would be a senior man, and must have had ministries for the full 14 years while they were there, he ended up now being the deputy speaker. What is the possibility of he taking up the lead of the opposition?
The possibility of any individual of the 30, with the exception of Prime Minister Motley, taking up lead of the opposition is quite easy.
Good. Well, there you go.
Actually, Ms. Motley said that she would also cross the floor and become a formidable opposition if necessary.
Well, there you go. It shows you how easy it can be done. Yeah. So I think that he was left behind because of, you know, he was part of the stabbing in the back.
If that's the argument, I don't understand it. Everybody else was part of the stabbing in the back.
But that's what I'm saying.
Front and center.
That's why I'm saying only he get left behind, so he might be tempted.
I think not.
Anyhow, we could leave that there, Mr. Vick. I might even see you, I might hear you in
but
September.
Mr. Strick is telling you, I can't just come off so. People here messaging me, telling me that you want to discuss polls at infinitum after the last election. And today I come into you now with information that is highly confidential and it was kept secret, and I'm prepared to disclose it to you and you alone, and you don't want the people to talk to hear it. And people are only saying that they want to hear about these polls.
They should have supported me while I was making the calls. I told Mr. Ellis already, when a tree fall in the forest, the bodies don't know, because they don't be there to disturb them. And when I was begging for a poll, nobody wanted the poll. Now they can't have the cake and eat it too. You can't get the benefits of not releasing a poll and now want the benefits of releasing it.
Mrs. Straker's tenantry, do you appreciate that the publication of polls, there's a difference when you have a poll from a Nation newspaper as distinct from when a private client commissions it?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Let the private person keep it. If the private person they had the balls or the heart to publish it ahead of time, then let it remain a secret. I don't have a problem with that.
If you were of the opinion, if you were leading a party, right, and you were of the opinion.
Wait. You like no secrets now?
I said if you were leading a party.
Go ahead. I get the impression that you mean that the body was leading the party. Go ahead.
No. I tell you, the body is a lady.
A lady.
You never said the body is a lady.
Leading a party. Right, leading a party.
Maybe it's the next one.
Anyhow, you go ahead. Anyhow, Mr. Vickram, you have a nice day, because I ain't discussing it.
All right, no problem. Mr. Straker, I must tell you, I am so disappointed, because I have looked forward to this conversation for a long time. I went and I got permission to have conversations with you about things that nobody else have not talked about. and I have not gone. You've denied me that opportunity. But you and I will chat again. I appreciate your calling, and I must tell you that I do appreciate your calls. And as a person who has not necessarily agreed with me, but at least has been very consistent in his view. And I hope that you will continue to call the program, not only in September, but now, because I do believe that you have every right to call and put in your two cents worth. So it is important that we remember that, in all seriousness. This is Down to Brass Tacks. We take a break now for the latest. When we come back, we continue our conversation and we go up until 1. We do hope you can stay with us. Good morning, or good afternoon, I'm sorry, and welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks.
Peter, good afternoon, sir.
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Mm-hmm. First of all, I have two salient points to make.
Oh, I know, really. This is my friend.
Yeah.
My brainy friend.
I want to make 2 points.
Sure.
But before I make 2 points, I would like to say that I hope me and Molly, in her wisdom, would give Natalie a job somewhere or the other. Go find employment for Natalie.
I support you in that, too.
Right?
Let me take the opportunity of your call to say that I support and endorse of you 100%. My feeling is that if Natalie is allowed, after this last battle that she fought, to go back out onto the streets, I think it would be a sore disappointment, and it would be unfortunate.
So it would be a slap in the face to the people that voted for her.
Precisely.
And people who have supported her outside of her constituency.
So I with you on that. So we need to find a job for her.
Yeah.
I propose that she be made one of two opposition senators.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if she's ready for the Senate, but I know that you could give her a job in some office as a filing clerk or something. She's intelligent enough to do that.
I think that her role as a community development person requires that she be on the ground. She clearly has a good ground game. So my thing is, and I'm not using ground in a negative or a pejorative manner.
I understand what you're saying.
A person who works with people at the grassroots level. I think that's
who
really
in and
her
among
strength.
The people.
Precisely. And not an office job for Natalie.
Right, okay. Now, let me get to my two substantive points. I like the idea of the Prime Minister, Mia Motley, introducing, for the first time, a Ministry of Maritime Affairs to involve the blue economy. I like that. And I want to tell Mr. Humphrey that my experience as a maritime person, if there's anything that I can do to help, he can call me, feel free to call me, and let me make my contribution in that area. Because I think it is a great thing, and there's so much to be discussed in the area of the blue economy that I think that it really is something that should be pursued, and pursued vigorously. The other thing I want to ask you, though, Peter, is this. You ever hear about a man named Ponzi?
No, I didn't.
From you know, you hear about the Ponzi scheme?
That's right, yeah. It was named after a person?
It was the man that started out with a man named Ponzi. I can't remember who Ponzi was.
Okay.
But he got 400 years in jail.
Wow.
And the scheme, Ponzi scheme, was started after him. He and some other people, they was able to trace money that these people siphon off and fool people to get billions upon billions of dollars. My argument is this. What is so difficult with spending $5 or $10 million to an international investigative forensic team to follow the paper trail and bring back an $80 or $90 million in this country? What is wrong with that, Peter? Tell me what's wrong with that. You just give a man 8 months in prison for stealing a baller, $11 baller, Hestel. Are you going to tell me that people like Kevin Millions can go scot-free?
I ain't saying they're going to go scot-free, but how are you going to lock them up?
But once you find the money, we will find ways to charge them. No. But listen to what you're saying, Peter. Even before the locking up part of it, I am saying that I don't see a problem with spending a couple of millions to retrieve a lot of millions. That's the argument I'm making. And you find millions that Stafford, Launder.
Right.
You find millions.
Right, that Bernie Madoff, right?
Right, Bernie.
The guy's name is Charles Ponzi. Thanks for one of your callers.
Right, Charles Ponzi.
Look,
you know?
Look, let me put my position on this very clearly, right? I don't have a problem with your going after money, finding it, and repatriating it to the Treasury and locking up thieves. I don't have a problem with
but
you
I
doing
even
that.
Oh,
no, but let me just
up.
Ask you, have you ever known of any situation in any of the Caribbean countries where a politician has been locked up for thieving?
No, but it got to be a force out
there. And that's my point. And there's a good reason why that's the case. It's not because politicians don't thief, right? That's not the reason. The reason is simply that it is extremely difficult to prosecute a politician for thieving. And the reason for that is also related to the fact that invariably politicians don't sign documents. When you hear people talking about, oh, you know, his signature on that, how many documents do you find politicians' signatures on?
Yeah, but
it just doesn't work that way, sir. And I'm saying I personally feel, I said this when there was a change of government in Antigua. I've said it, change of government in St. Kitts. I say it all the time. Do not waste your emotional energy trying to lock up people from the last administration, because I have found it to be a very expensive exercise. Invariably, it always ends in futility. And ultimately, it is emotionally challenging, because then you're going to have you and Mrs. Straker's tenantry and every day arguing on the radio, and then they're going to lock you up. To me, the emotion is better you put to work, ensure that it doesn't happen again, and secondly, let's work to build this country back. That's where my energy wants. I want my energy to go.
I'm in total agreement with you. No,
right, and we're looking at, listen, the judgment that that group has faced, to me, is a clear, unmitigated final judgment, and let them go and enjoy the retirement.
Because don't forget what I said. I told Mr. Stewart that the power of the people is greater than the people in power.
Agreed.
And may I only use my leg cliche, and Peter Thorne...
It wasn't only you that said it, though.
Huh?
It wasn't only you that said it.
It wasn't me.
It was said before by others. But anyhow, that's not the point.
I heard it for the first time when the people from Heartland, you know, school in the States were protesting. But I mean, I have not heard it spoken in or said in Barbados before then. So I brought it here. But I am happy to know that Mayor Molly has used it to make the point. You know, but Peter, I'm not so much interested in locking up people. I'm interested. I won't really want to lock them up. You know, because they will be broke. They will be broke, and that's basically.
But anyhow, we won't progress any further on that. I don't feel it's a priority. You think it should be? I really don't feel it's a priority. I think that right now our priority is
stopping. You're on it, Peter. You're going to the party or
not? No, because most people would say that they would like somebody to get locked up, because you know how Barbadians think, how people from the Caribbean think. And as I told you, this is a conversation that I've had in several Caribbean countries. I've had this conversation with prime ministers who themselves have been saying this is something that we have to do. And my view was the same then. You got priorities, deal with your priorities. Let us try and get Barbados' economy back on the right track. Let's try and sort out our foreign exchange situation. Let's try and stop the sewage from flowing on the south coast. All them things, I think all that is what we got to deal with before we let lock up anybody.
And stop the leakage of the foreign exchange.
Precisely.
Anyway, Peter, we're talking
all right.
With you, brother.
All right, take care. Good talking with you, Brace. This is Dr. Brass Stocks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Always leaving the best for last.
Well, this might not be last.
Well, I tell you, there's so many
7 minutes.
There's so many things you've said this morning, Mr. Wickham. I normally agree with you on several things, but this morning I want to disagree with you.
This is Mark?
It is.
Mark, how are you doing, sir?
I want to disagree with you on several things. I don't think I'd be able to debate all of them with you, but... The last guy, in terms of the Ponzi scheme, if you remember well, he found a way to build a home in Barbados. He was arrested in Barbados. He was taken back. As much as that.
Oh, it was here Charles Ponzi was arrested?
I don't like to call names.
No, but it's a fact about 1920 something? No?
No, I don't want to put the station there.
Oh, Charles Ponzi was in 1920s, right. Sorry. So it's not Charles Ponzi you're talking about.
No, it was the guy who had owned the Empire State Building and all this fellas who eventually found a way to build a home in Barbados. He was arrested in Barbados.
Okay.
His wife was arrested in Barbados. Let me go back to this point of forensic, as far as I'm concerned. No, on the platform of the opposition at the time, government now, there were presentations and statements to the effect of a forensic test, forensic investigation. Now, a forensic investigation, in my opinion, does not mean lock up alone. It means that the course of justice must be taken. And if there's a statement to the fact that there's so many areas within Barbados in terms of government that they're questionable situation, I haven't seen nothing wrong with government investigating the movement of, if it is alleged that there was movement of money. And if for forensic, I do not believe in the commission. I believe that a forensic examination will tell us exactly if there was or if there wasn't. So I don't think we need to get out there and accuse people from 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016, 2018, and don't bring proof that these people are not guilty or they're guilty. So I'm saying, yes, let's have a forensic test. Secondly, you spoke about nuisance people.
If I were to tell you that the forensic audit would cost probably $3 million to start, of the U.S. variety, would you still feel it is worth it to go on
yes.
that exploratory mission?
Yes, because when you look at people who can deal in $4.4 billion, and when you look at people who have debt in billions of dollars and trade out of this country, and it's questionable. $3 million is no money to spend to find out exactly who are the beneficiaries okay. of these. So let's spend the
money. Suppose I were to tell you that your forensic investigation would cost you $3 million.
Yeah.
It might reveal the fact that there was $10 million that was the property of a third party sitting in an account somewhere in Dubai, maybe?
Yes. What
okay.
was the banking?
And your forensic auditor also told you, well, look, if you are going to get those funds out of Dubai repatriated, you're actually going to have to sue this third party in court in Dubai. And that's probably going to cost you another million or two.
No,
Mark, follow my train of thought. You get where I'm going with this?
I get where you're going.
Because this is not a fictional story, you know. Because the investigations into the medical benefit scheme in Antigua and Barbuda reveal exactly that problem. They found out that there was substantial monies, but they were held in an offshore account somewhere. The only way they could get at it is if they engaged in expensive legal battles in Miami, which they started. But they found, quite frankly, that it was coming to the point where it wasn't worth it.
Mr. Wickham, the banker in New York that is now serving time in the United States that set up his banks in Antigua and all the plural, let's call names, you know who I'm talking about, that was involved in cricket. He was investigated. He was investigated and found that certain deals were not fair, and he's paying the price. I'm saying, I agree with you. It's a waste of time. You would want to say, it's not a waste of time. It is justice settled in the minds of people that this particular individual or person have swindled themselves to riches.
You know what, Mark? It comes down to a question of whether we feel that such a conclusion alone is worth the financial effort. And I appreciate that this is not BLP policy. Certainly, I'm not associated with that organization. This is just my view, that I think that at a time like this, our emotional, our financial energies ought to be placed in terms of the rebuilding effort, and I don't see it as a priority. And that's where I stand on it. I'm not saying anybody didn't do anything wrong, but my experience has told me that, you know what, there are things that we need to focus on. And for me, job number one is the economy, job number two is sewage. So let me prioritize that. But Mark, we're going to chat about this some more. Folks, unfortunately, time is gone and we didn't have a whole lot to get, time to get everything that we want to talk about done. But we'll be back next week, or I'll be back next week, and I look forward to continuing these conversations. Of course, next week I want to shift away from the election talk and let's look at other matters that we need to deal with, like crop over, which is upon us, because we can't talk about this thing forever. So, special thanks to the production team, to Mr. Dennis Johnson, who was a one-man band today. Dennis, thank you so much for your assistance and support, and also for the picture, which unfortunately took a lot of attention away from me, that we provided before the start. My name is Peter Wickham. I look forward to chatting with you next week. Until then, do take care and enjoy your weekend. Bye-bye.